All right, let's kick it up. Here we go. A very fast 1 hour of a real Kipper and Bourne show about to begin. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne. In for Sammy McKee, Daniele Franceschi, who's upstairs right now with Jake the Snake Schultz.
He is. Let me start
what
the show.
What do we got him on assignment?
Oh, yeah, he's somewhere doing something about something.
Golf. I think golf had something to do
McKee?
With it.
McKee?
Yeah, yeah, it's not often I pay attention to him yesterday.
He's some Golf Canada.
Yeah,
man.
Golf
he's
Canada.
He's just golfing, let's be honest. Happy birthday to you.
No, we stopped counting those, I think. Yeah.
You don't put them in your stat total anymore?
As soon as you pass mid-50s, I think.
Celebration
just,
in order?
No, just, you know, heavy drinking this morning.
Yeah, good. This morning,
so I'm just hoping that my buzz wears off by the time we hit the air.
Couple little Buddhas. I'll let that fruity breakfast blend.
I'll let everybody decide whether or not my buzz disappeared or not.
There
no, all kidding aside, thanks for the well wishes. Also on social media, really appreciate people reaching out, and it's all good.
Yeah, well, that's great. Well, I hope you have a good one,
and
I hope you have more fun tonight than working. But I know you're doing some home stuff that sounds not as fun. So, sometimes you just get through birthdays.
Wherever you are on my June 4th birthday, we're glad you're aboard, watching and listening. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus. And remember, if you don't catch the fastest hour in hockey live, you can download it. And as always, this hour of Real Kipper and Bourne is brought to you by Bet365. All right. Any rumblings leading up to our game one on Saturday, or is this just one of those... just another day where you just sit and wait.
It's just the sit and wait thing. You're looking at the distance between these games. We laid it out a little bit, but, I mean, they start June 8th, which is a week between games. Yeah, it's a long time to lose momentum. A lot of times we had looked at these series and said teams that come out of, like, best of sevens and competitive series have an advantage early on, but neither team will have that advantage. Plenty of time to prepare. My guess, that means a very tight game one.
So, on the outside looking in, is there a feeling that one team might be a little healthier than the other? Do you feel like, the rumblings on Evander Kane or Leon Draisaitl at times getting up a little slower than you'd like after hitting the ice?
Yeah.
Is there a sense that you have just from watching that you think maybe which teams had more wear and tear?
You know, I think they're probably both pretty banged up, but those two players in particular are big names to have some injuries, and we saw them going down the tunnel last game. But a week, I mean, if you were playing the game and you finish the game and then you get a week, they're going to be fine. I don't think that's going to be a huge factor. Have you done any sort of assessment of what you think this series is going to look like? I know we're not ready to make predictions. Maybe you are.
Yeah.
But what do you think the shape of it is going to look like?
Yeah, I think... I don't think it's a stretch to think that the Florida Panthers will be the hunter and the Edmonton Oilers will be the hunted.
But does that leave the Edmonton Oilers on the power play a lot?
Good question.
Which is, kind of leave it into the ref's hands. I'm sure if you're the Oilers, you're trying to grease the wheels that the officials need to call penalties when they're penalties.
Yeah, you know what? On the thought of health and the rest here, let's go to Paul Maurice for our first Kipper's Clipper on teams resting and being healthy going into game one.
You want fairness. You know what? In truth, you want both teams healthy. You want both fairly reasonably similar schedules, and away they go. It's probably the perfect amount of time off. You can take a couple of days, then you can push a little bit in the middle and then get ready for the game. So... we are as healthy as you can be as a hockey club.
Yeah. And if you go back this time last year, going into their final last year's Florida, they were not healthy.
They were banged up.
They were banged up. And I know that there's a few guys now really happy about the way they feel physically, at least from the Florida Panthers side.
Yeah.
Paul Maurice said it, and players have also said it, that we're healthy, man. We feel good.
Yeah. They're in a much better place. I know going into that series, too, it was also like that was gravy for the Panthers, right? They were the 8 seed last year. Getting to the cup final was a victory unto itself. Yep. They were hurt. Anything from there was just kind of play and see where the chips fall. this year feels different. They are healthy. They expected to be here. They're there. Like, they mean business. So the Oilers are going to get the best of them. That doesn't mean the Oilers can't handle them, but they're going to get a good Panthers team.
Well, a big storyline going into game one is who's the Edmonton version of a Sam Bennett or a...
Is it Kane?
It has to be.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, this guy can be that. And, you know, that's why... When I was thinking about the series, I was kind of thinking, you know, this Panthers team is so good top to bottom, but there's the special teams for the Edmonton, and then there are guys in Edmonton that can play in the blue paint, and Zach Hyman can score there, Evander Kane can score there. Yeah. Like, if you want some guys to fall on the goalie and get some ugly ones, they can do it too. They don't maybe as much as Bennett, but they can do it.
Okay, let's go to Coach Knobloch on Kane's availability in game one, and maybe he'll give us a little... idea of how healthy he is.
Chris, do you have any update on Evander Kane? Do you expect him to be able to start the series for you?
I do. Yeah, I don't believe he'll skate tomorrow. I think he'll be on the ice Friday and playing on Saturday.
All right, is that it?
Yeah.
I didn't get to hear the rest of that clip.
We had producer in our ear at the same time. We were both like,
okay. Firing off Gary Galley's availability right now.
Which is great.
All right, let's go to the Hockey Night in Canada star and terrific job covering the Rangers and Florida. Let's welcome him in. Hockey Night in Canada, Sportsnet, and Denver's Gary Galley. The Broncos.
Look at the color scheme
Wow.
today. Love it.
Those are
my Broncos, man. My Broncos.
And little oiler color there.
Well, you know, 84 is the this is the 40th anniversary of the 84 championship team, Bowling Green. So that's the 84, not the lumberyard. But a lot of us felt like we were working in a lumberyard with carrying around some of the wooden sticks we were using back in the day. But this year's the celebration. So we're thinking we're 20 years old again, which we're not.
Well, listen, if anybody knows the Florida Panthers, it's you after covering them against the New York Rangers. And we saw them dominate on so many levels here. But, you know, before we move forward here, was there ever a thought in your mind that said, holy moly, Shesterkin could actually steal this one?
I kind of thought that he could steal a game. But I didn't really feel like he could steal the series, not the way that they were playing. He was the best goalie left of the final four teams. I believe he's the best goalie that's remaining, and he played like it. I mean, the volume of work that he had to face, the amount of time in the defensive zone where a goaltender has to be alert and ready in position all the time is very taxing. I thought he was absolutely marvelous. And that's not to take anything away from Bobrovsky, who was very good as well. But I believe if not for Shesterkin, this could have been over in four or five. So to go to six had a lot to do with that. So New York just got totally grinded out, which is what Florida does. They make you defend. They make you defend a lot. They grind you down. And they wear you out, and eventually you have no juice left to go on offense, and you're just basically in survival mode. And the Rangers tried. Like, I know at times people looked like that they weren't, but they were trying. They just couldn't get through. And I felt the same way about Vegas last year, because I covered Vegas for a few series, and it got to the point where it was fairly obvious to me that there wasn't a team that if Vegas played to their capabilities, there wasn't a team that could beat them. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if Florida plays to their capabilities, I don't know if they're beatable.
Yeah. You know, we've been talking about the shape of what this Cup final series might look like. Have you done some thinking about how these two match up and where one team may have an advantage or a disadvantage?
Well, certainly both teams' penalty killing units are playing really well. I felt like that Florida just didn't respect New York's power play because they figured it out. They figured out how to kill it. The four-man press, New York never really got to a point where they felt comfortable on the power play. They really attacked at the blue lines, forced New York to not be able to get set up. So now you're going and you're looking at the best power play in the National Hockey League and the Edmonton Oilers, and it took them a while to get going in the Dallas series. And I say get ready because Florida is extremely aggressive and you're not going to get a lot of time to set up. So they're going to have to really be on their toes. But I think for Florida, who was willing to take a few penalties because they are a very like in your face kind of group. Maybe they're going to be a little more careful. And I know people are saying, you know, they're undisciplined. That was last year. This year, this is a very disciplined team. Paul Maurice has this team believing in play to the edges and no farther. You know, and we don't need penalties going over the edge. And what you saw Mikula run into the goaltender and then Gustafson just blew it by punching him, and that negated a 5-on-3, which could have changed that game and maybe bought New York a bit of life. That was really one of the few times. I think Bennett really squeezed Trouba's helmet off once. Those were the two times in the series where I thought they were kind of selfish penalties where you weren't thinking. But other than that, they're a very disciplined team. Maurice has got them playing that way. So Edmonton's going to have a power play that's functioning, and they're going to have to figure out how to exit their zone on a regular basis without spending large amounts of times defending in their zone. You know, Skinner is playing well. Can he handle volume, the kind of volume that Florida's throwing? Mm-hmm. You know, getting 15, 20 shots a game is one thing. Getting 35, 40 is a different story in quality. So that's going to be something they're going to have to really take care of as well.
We're talking to Gary Galli, former NHL defenseman, current Sportsnet analyst. So as far as this physicality, Gary, Florida's going to push them. There's no question about that. And I'm just wondering, what will dictate how hard they push here? Like, how important is it Florida to not chase Connor on the score sheet or Hyman if they're down 3-1? I mean, is that going to dictate a lot of how hard Florida goes after the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, Florida has four pretty good lines. And Paul Maurice uses these lines, and he doesn't shy away from too much. But we showed him, we had a really great graphic that we had on our last broadcast that the best players on every team that, you know, Kucherov, you know, and then, you know, Pasternak, and then Panarin. And they show the amount of goals they had. And I think at the time we showed the clip, it was just Pasternak had the one goal. And that was it. And then, of course, Panarin had one late in game six. But Barkov, I mean, head-to-head with Barkov, there's just no one has been able to get anything. So this is the Selke Trophy winner. This is a guy that plays as good a 200-foot game and is, you know, the size. And I look at him, it reminds me, he's got the size of Tim Kerr, but he moves and he's got better skill sets than Tim Kerr had. But he's that size, a guy that just rolls off hits, bounces around, comes out of corners, possesses the puck, distributes the puck well, a real good leader for that team. So it's going to be interesting to see that matchup and how much Paul Maurice, I mean, you know, you're going to get a steady dose of, Forsling. You're going to get Forsling a lot against McDavid. He basically shut down Kreider, and Kreider's a big, strong man, and people underestimated Gustav Forsling, and he shut him down. I mean, he had an incredible series. So there's going to be a lot of who plays on the defensive part for Florida against those lines, because sometimes on the road, as you know, you don't get the last change. So there's going to be the defensive pairings to keep an eye on and see that who Maurice wants to put out against McDavid. And then if they split up McDavid and Draisaitl, who does he want to move from line to line? But Florida's defense is good. I do believe, like, the one thing about Florida is they don't get rattled. Mm-hmm. They just don't get rattled. If they're down 1-0, they don't get rattled. They're down 1-0 in the series. They lost the first game at home to Boston. No big deal. They just went about their business. They go on the road the next series. They win game one. They lose at home. No big deal. You know, an overtime game that could have been up 3-1. Instead, you know, it was a different story. But they just don't get rattled. It's like they're so – it's hard to explain, but they're just – they've bought into who they are. They know who they are. They know what their identity is. And they know that if they play with that identity, their chance of winning is going to be at a real high, you know, they're going to have a great chance of winning. So they don't move away from it. Any interview you did with Reinhardt or Barkov or anybody at the end of a period, they didn't go, well, we got to get more shots. Yeah, we got to get pucks in deep. We got to play better defensively. We got to keep hitting. Like, it was nothing about scoring or who was going to score or that we need to get more off. It was all about their identity, how they're going to win. And for Edmonton, they're going to have to put some dents in that. They're going to have to get Florida on their heels. They're going to have to get Florida chasing, like you said. They're going to have to try to get Florida off balance a little bit. Maybe get in on the forecheck on them, force them to have to defend a little more. These kind of things that you have to do, regularly in a series. You can't just, like, I think Adam Fox said it, we finally get out of our end, we get one chance at their end, and then we're back in our end again. Like, we didn't sustain enough. They're going to have to sustain offense to make it work. And Edmonton's more than capable. I mean, they're a very good team. They're showing that they have some metal as far as the defensive side of the game. They're showing that they can shut down a good offensive team and not give them a lot. So they are showing a lot of the qualities of a team that, is potentially could give Florida a good run for their money. But I have Florida, that I want to see Edmonton win, because I just want to see them win. I'm a Canadian. It's a Canadian team. We need one here. We should get one. So I'd love to see them win, but I would have Florida just slightly ahead of them right now, and Edmonton's going to have their work cut out for them.
I feel similarly, gals. Going into the series, one of the things I'm trying to do is look for those strengths and weaknesses and differences in Skinner and Bobrovsky. Maybe there's some, maybe that's not quite equal. The other thing I wonder about and want to get your thoughts on is behind the bench. Paul Maurice is, I believe, in his 28th season as an NHL coach. Knobloch may have, what's he got, 28 games? No, I'm joking, but probably 90 games of NHL experience or whatever it is at this point with the playoffs combined. Will that have a factor in this at all? Will you see everything Knobloch has done so far has turned to gold? Will that keep up in the finals?
Well, if you're Knobloch, you look to things like, Dan Bylsma.
Yeah.
You look to things that, guys who've done, right? Larry Robinson took over the bench in Jersey, I think, for Robbie Vitoric late in the year, too. I'm trying to think. That was a while ago. But there are coaches that have taken over a bench mid-season or late in the season and then gone on to win Stanley Cups.
Eight. Eight.
Wow.
That's a big number. Eight have done it. It's a huge number.
Berube, Lamoriello, I think. Was he one of them? Yeah, there's a bunch.
So it's kind of a thing where, if you're in Knobloch's position, don't look at the things that you can't attain. You can't be Paul Maurice. You can't have 28 years. You don't have 28 years. But you know that there are guys that got it done with a lot less because they stayed in the moment, trusted their gut instincts, understood their team and understood the opposition, and they went out and played. I mean, you've got the best player in the world on your team, and then you got a guy who's not too far behind him. And I think this is a team that has learned how to play defense and the responsibility of defense by taking a lot of hard knocks and a lot of disappointments and a lot of people challenging them. Can they do it? Can this team ever figure it out? So this is a team that has risen up to the challenge of that and are finally saying, we get it, we understand, and we're doing it. So, it's one of those things where the Stanley Cup Finals, like any other playoff series, has momentum swings in it, in games, in the series itself. So, how Edmonton is able to grab a hold of momentum at times and then really shut down Florida's momentum and not give them a lot of time. The one stat that jumped out at me, guys, because I thought Florida was by far and away the best of any team in the playoffs, was that they put teams at stints of 9-plus minutes without having a shot on net many times in the playoffs this year. And I didn't think there was anybody that did it more than them. And there was one team that did it more than them, and that's Edmonton. And that was a shocker to me. I looked at that stat. I was like, whoa. So Edmonton has done it as well. They have shut down their opponent for long periods of time. So, so I think that's a really good sign and confident for a team that's going into the finals. Obviously not with the experience that Florida has. They were just there last year. They have the sting, I've done that. I've gone to the finals and lost, and it hurts. It stings. And, and you always worry, are you ever going to get another chance? I never did, and so it just was really hard. And it's still, every time they hand the cup out, I'm cheesed off for about 30 seconds. Still. And then I'm happy for the guys, right? I'm happy for everybody, and it's a joyous thing to watch. And, but for the first 30 seconds, I'm cheesed off. you know, and it's just, it's still with me. So to do that last year and have that so close to them this year, they're not going to want that to go down again. That would be extremely hard, especially, you know, they know Reinhardt and they know Montour. They're going to get guys, you know, this team might not look the same ever again. This is their chance. And this, you know, and so hopefully we're going to have a really good series. I think it will be a really good series. I think it's going to be one that's going to be long. I don't think it's going to be short, and it's going to be interesting to see. To me, can Florida continue to control the ice as they have and grind like they have? And can Edmonton figure out a way to exit, spend less time in that defensive zone and spend more time attacking than Florida's had to handle in the first three series?
Interesting. You mentioned spend less time in your own zone, and then you mentioned the stretch of not giving up a shot on goal. Are we still underestimating this blue line? Are we still kind of waiting for them to falter? And is it going to happen? Is it not going to happen? Where do you have the depth of both blue lines? And in particular, you know, the thought of, you know, Ekholm and Bouchard kind of just carrying the freight on the back end here.
You know, getting to where they are now, you have nothing but to give them credit. I mean, they have done a really nice job, and they've taken a ton of criticism and a ton of people doubting them. And maybe that's the fire that drives them too, right? Maybe that's why they feel like they have something to prove and something to show. And the team is stuck up for them. You know, even when people have criticized their defense in the past and certain players on their team, they've done nothing but stick together and stick up for their guys. And that galvanizes you as a team as well. You know, for the Edmonton Oilers, this is an unbelievable opportunity. And for Connor McDavid, who watched Jack Eichel carry this thing around last year, you know, this is something he wants to have, and he wants to, and he on his resume card. And so this is going to be a guy who's, of course, driven to the utmost. And when he's driven, he's a difficult guy to contain. So, you know, I think this is the first time maybe in the three series, and they had Kucherov in series one, right, that they're having a guy that, you know, can really turn a game on his own on a dime, and they're going to have to defense around that. So that's going to be interesting to see how Paul Maurice decides how he wants to handle that, who he wants to handle that. I would imagine at home it's going to be Barkov. That's my guess. But you know, Paul Maurice, he'll have a plan. And for the Edmonton Oilers, man, speed, get that speed up, pace. Because Florida tries to kill the pace. They try to take the game down to a point where, like for the New York Rangers, who never flip pucks out of the, you know, I know the Dallas series had a lot of flipping going on. Flip it out. Get out of the zone. Whatever you do, don't turn it over. Flip it out. We'll chase it down. The New York Rangers didn't start flipping the puck till game six when they realized they couldn't get out of their
right.
end. Then they started flipping it, but the problem was they didn't know how to flip it. They couldn't get it over the blue line. They kept turning it over.
Yeah, and it came right
for the
back.
For the Edmonton Oilers, they're going to say, look it, we know how to flip and chase it down. We know how to put the puck in the spots. We know how to attack it. So that's going to be some adjustments Florida's going to have to make. You can't let Florida just walk in and just feel good about themselves and play their game. You have to disrupt their game. You have to do something that makes them change the way they're playing and will your identity onto them a little bit, try to throw them off a little bit. If they're comfortable and you let them play their game, that's going to be a tough opponent. But Edmonton's got to disrupt that and get them off their game and make them do some things they haven't had to do in the first three rounds.
Last one for me, just kind of a quick thought. Weird series timing, right? A week gap before they start. There's 3 days between a lot of the games. The travel is substantial. Yeah, I mean, is this going to play into it at all that it's almost I don't know. It feels like tough to get this thing going.
It's going to be the grind within the grind.
No kidding.
I mean, what is it? Over 4,000 kilometers per trip?
Yeah.
I think it's the farthest two teams could be apart.
The poor media gals.
Yeah. Come on. You know, but and then the 2 day breaks, three 2 day breaks, I guess it is, right? Three 2 day breaks.
So, yeah.
Game seven could be the 24th of June. That's a long ways away. And I think this is going to go six or seven games. I really do. You know, unless one team just jumps on top early to the point where, the other team loses its momentum, right? And you know, that's what happened to us in 90, right? We lost the first game in triple overtime, Klima scores, and then, you know, a game that, you know, we could have had, we didn't get, and then game two, we came back into it, and, you know, we lose again at home. All of a sudden, you're down 2-0 at home. Now it's like, it's tough. If something like that happens, mm-hmm. One team could fall off the rails. But, I don't think that will. I mean, I think both these teams have done a really good job of rebounding. They've showed really good resiliency, it's going to be a fun series to watch. And both teams didn't touch the respectable trophy. So that means that both of them think that by not touching it, they're going to win. So someone's going to be wrong there.
Right.
And for the Florida Panthers, they touched it the year before. Now, I didn't realize until after the game, because Paul Maurice was extremely vocal to his captain, do not touch that.
I was surprised.
Well, they touched it the year before.
Do you want to know? No. This is what I asked. I said, why was he like that?
Yeah.
And you know what they said? Because he told them not to touch it last year.
Yeah, he told them not to
They went and they grabbed it.
If nothing else, so they're bought into what their coach is saying this year.
To me, like, to watch him so adamant on the bench like that, I mean, Barkov's been around a long time. He's the one out there taking the bumps and the bruises. Like, if I want to touch it, I'll touch it. I mean, like...
Everyone's falling in line, right? Falling like, behind the skipper.
I'm not superstitious, but why take any chances? Right?
I'm not superstitious. I'm a little stitious.
but at the end of the day, it's the player's call.
It is. But the crazy thing is that he told them the year before not to touch it, and they didn't listen to him. Yeah. So they went, and it didn't work out. So now they're like, okay, maybe we should listen to him this time. But I'm of the belief these are the most beautiful trophies in sports. I have never seen trophies handed out that are more beautiful than the National Hockey League. The blood, sweat, and tears that goes into winning them. Hey, listen, and this isn't a knock on other sports, but, you know, you don't win a series or a wild card game and go in champagne tossing here in the locker room.
It is crazy watching baseball celebrate, and then our guys won't even touch the trophy.
This is an arduous journey that takes a long time to get done, Kipper. You know this. And every series is such an own battle zone. And when you get to that trophy, I think, you know, you may never get back there again. You might never get a picture with it. You touched it. You never did anything with it. And then you get this little replica sent to you. It's like, that's what I got to take my picture with. Like, so it's such a beautiful trophy that you think the guy should take it and take pictures, but they don't.
I won't debate that, but if they continue to disrespect it like that, then they got to seriously consider not presenting it anymore. It's almost really awkward to watch Bill Daly, and he doesn't even know what to do with his arms.
It's great.
Right? They're like kind of dangling and hanging.
I love it.
He looks awkward. They won't go near it. Like, what are we doing?
It's great. It's a perfect hockey quirk. It is the embodiment of the way our players think, and I think it's wonderful.
But you can send an intern to present it. Get the Zamboni driver to stand out there. Why are you wasting Bill Daly's time?
And they didn't just not go near it. They made a 4-foot width gap on either side of it.
No one wanted to accidentally brush it with their jersey.
And you know what? Kyle Okposo, and here's a guy who has, this is a really good person who's really battled a lot of things to be in the National Hockey League. He's a leadership guy in Buffalo. We know the struggles in Buffalo. This guy has been not a sniff close to anything. And here he is going for the Stanley Cup. And here's this trophy in front of him. And you know he wants to touch it. You know he wants. So he came around the back of the pile and poked his head around. So at least he was in the picture near the trophy. I thought it was such nice to see him do that. It just showed how much it meant to him that this is somebody who didn't win this last year or has won a couple of them. He's never even been close to this. And to see that near him, and I think some of the players were worried he was going to touch it, and they kept telling him, no, don't get that close to it. So it was odd to watch it. Hey, Kipper, we touched it in 90. It didn't work out for us. So maybe the second time around, I won't touch it. But I'm too late now. So
hey, maybe I
don't even want to touch the cup still. I don't know. Is there some? I go to Sean O'Donnell's Stanley Cup party. And he wants me to drink out of it, and I don't want to. And he's like, Gaga, you're not winning it.
Who says who?
Yeah,
gals, that's... I'll buy a team, I'll hire you, and you can drink out of it. That's still out there, buddy. That's still out there. I got no money, but
I blame my parents for putting me in it when I was an infant. I've touched it unwillingly. Does that count?
Gals, great stuff, man. Thanks for doing this, pal. As always, great season, man.
Hey, guys, I really appreciate you having me on and shooting the breeze with you about hockey. I love coming on.
Oh, good.
You guys enjoy the finals.
Yes.
You guys have done a wonderful job with the show. I really think it's awesome. Enjoy the finals, and eventually in September, you can have a break.
Well, listen, we're coming back at you. We're going to bring you back in midpoint of the Stanley Cup final. So you're not going away too far.
Looking forward to it.
Okay, Gary Galli,
thanks,
everybody.
Gals.
Maybe next season when they present that trophy, they can put like a COVID mask on it so it will remind the players to stay within 6 feet of it.
If you just wrap the whole thing in saran wrap, you could hold it. It would still look the same, but you wouldn't be physically touching it maybe.
Yeah. I don't know. They got to come up with something. It's just
I thought about this. Should Bettman be like, hey, like this is a trophy. We want people excited to win it. Either soccer players, you know, or baseball players, whatever. You celebrate every round. Touch the damn trophy. But I like this. This is fun. It's our unique little hockey superstition that collectively most people buy into. Why not? We're talking about it.
Yeah.
It's a dumb league.
It's a dumb league.
We're dumb.
We're super dumb, but let's embrace the dumbness. And
superstitious.
Yeah, so superstitious. We have to go to break because we have a guest and we have to do game time.
All right. You heard the man. My producer away from Sam McKee right here, Justin Bourne.
Channeled him.
More of us when we return.
In-depth Blue Jays coverage with an analytical twist. Jays Talk Plus with Blake Murphy. Be sure to subscribe and download Jays Talk on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nick Kipper, it's Justin Bourne. Real Kipper and Bourne show. In a few minutes, we'll welcome in longtime Edmonton Oiler, Ryan Smith. He's getting ready to watch his former team go to a Stanley Cup final for the first time in 18 years, one that he was a big part of.
Yes, sir. That's excited to get him on the show today. Do we think I should do game time now?
Yeah, squeeze it in.
All right.
While we work on Ryan.
It's game time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary. Bet365 must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Play responsibly. Couple things catch my eye. Stanley Cup winner. The Oilers are favored underdogs plus 110.
You almost surprised me there for a second.
No, yeah. They're underdogs plus 110. Florida's minus 130. More I think about this series, I think it's a reasonable bet to take the value with Edmonton. One of the things that stands out to me most, top goal scorer in this series, there's names at the top. Hyman is most likely to lead the series in goals. Sam Reinhart right behind him. You can get Connor McDavid, sixth highest odds, plus 550. Don't hate that. I also, Evander Kane is plus 3,300, plus 3,300. So, a big bet on Evander Kane because he's in playoffs. What do you have a year ago? 12 goals in the postseason or something? He can get hot. This might be his type of series.
Do you have any feel about the Oilers like you would have Pittsburgh Penguins Stanley Cup in what,
2016, 17?
But yeah, where Sidney and Malkin just carried the offense, right? 30 plus seasons.
Yeah.
In playoff points.
Yeah.
And then everybody underneath. And at the time, Matt Murray in that, question marks.
Yep.
Skinner, question marks. Letang on the blue line, you know.
He should have missed a year. Letang missed one of those two.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. He missed the first one.
Yeah.
Bouchard there to offset some offense on the back end.
Yeah, I can see that as a comparable. Like,
it's... Connor and Leon are going to have to carry the offense or bust here, we assume, just like Sid did in Malkin.
They probably are, but I do think that there's more behind them than those guys had, and Kane is one of those guys. He had 13 goals in 15 playoff games 2 years ago. He's only got 4 in 18 games this year, but he's the type of guy that could get weird and could do it. All right, let's wrap that up and we'll carry on that conversation. That was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for the latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Play responsibly. But yes, I do think that there are more people behind him, or but behind those guys, Hyman being one of them, obviously. But RNH is being that dude this year. The guy that they hoped the number one overall pick could be. He's that secondary wave that they need when everyone focuses on Connor and Leon.
So if we went back a few years, you know, when they first broke in the league and they got these first pick overalls and top picks, of course, Nugent Hopkins, first overall, Eberle. Do you remember when they re-signed them to those $5 million contracts and people were like, it's way too much and too much too soon and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And now you got Nugent Hopkins, who's a little over $5 million right now.
Yeah.
With unbelievable value.
Unbelievable value.
All right. Let's welcome in longtime Edmonton Oiler. Remember in 2006, Ryan Smith, how are you, pal?
I'm doing really well. How are you guys?
We are. Where are we finding you right now? Where are you watching the Stanley Cup final?
We live out here in Nashville, Tennessee, and just out on, we have a ranch. I don't want to call it a farm. It's a ranch. We have some cattle. Yeah, we have lots going on here at the farm.
Awesome. So, like, just give me your thoughts on watching the journey of the Edmonton Oilers this spring, and if by chance, you know, will you be able to get to Edmonton for a game, hopefully a clinching one?
Yeah, we'll see how things go. I mean, we got lots going on around here, but I've kept up to date on the games. Actually, we got one game on throughout the playoffs. We went up. My son was at a spring camp for a team, and we caught a game. So, but they're playing really well. They've got some depth, more depth than I've ever seen. You know, they've got. You know, Skinner's doing his job. You know, he doesn't have to be great. All he has to be is good, and he's doing that right now.
Ryan, what are your fondest memories from your guys' Stanley Cup run in 2006?
Oh, gosh, there was quite a few. Even just before getting in, you know, and into playoffs, it was like the second or third last game. We, you know, since December or the trade deadline, and we just carried momentum right on through. But we just snuck in as eighth seed, but we were firing all cylinders. The big game, I think, that helped us was beating San Jose. You know, we were down 2-0 in the series. We go come back home, and we chipped away and battled back into the series, tied 2-2 in the series, and then we won the next two after that.
It is remarkable to start a journey that almost ends up being, what, 7-8 weeks to win a Stanley Cup, playing every other night. I mean, I do recall you guys being banged up, but the biggest one, I think, in 2006 was Rolson hurting his knee. And just what it really takes this time of year, Smitty, to end up lifting the Stanley Cup, and health is a big part of it. What do you remember in terms of the banging and the bruising that you guys suffered?
Well, that's the key. You said it. You know, it's the bangs, the bumps, the bruises, the, you know, few broken bones here and there. You know, guys fight through it for sure, but you know, I think the technology and the doctors that help out these days and the training that these guys do is way above when we played, and even before you, Kip. I mean, just the fact that, you know, trying to stay healthy all year long is one thing, but then doing it in the playoffs is another thing.
When you look at this Oilers team here, what are your thoughts about the way they're constructed and the way they play? Obviously, it's a little, you know, they got the flash and dash at the top of the lineup, that's for sure. It's a little different than you guys were constructed, maybe.
Yeah, we weren't as gifted as far as a lot of their.
I was trying to say that carefully.
Yeah, no, that's all good. No, we had grinders. We had a lot of grinders, but we had guys that competed. And, you know, and you know, that was how I played the game, is the competitiveness. And we had that depth as far as, you know, the guys that wanted to compete on a nightly basis. And we found ways to overcome some skill at times. And hard work overcomes skill if you have that mindset of doing it. And we had that in 06. And, you know, obviously I do believe that there's a good mix with the existing Oilers right now with a lot of great talent. But they have some workers. Like I said, they have some depth that is really helping this organization, you know, in the last few years. And I think they solidified certain areas that have helped them get over the hump now.
Listen, I don't want to take anything away from certain markets south of the border, but to go on a run like this in a Canadian city, Smitty, and what you personally went through in 2006 and what you're personally watching today in Edmonton, it's fascinating. It's remarkable, isn't it, to be a part of that?
Yeah, most definitely. And you know as well, Kip, the media hype, the fans, it's our game, it's Canadians' game, and you know, overcoming difficult situations at different times throughout a season is one thing, but when it gets to playoff, everything's magnified, and you got to be on top of your game. And you know, media, fans, they don't miss a lot up there. So you know, when you get to like Skinner, for example, he didn't have the game that I'm sure he'd like to, and then all of a sudden he rebounds and is playing the way he's doing it. So sometimes players can't overcome that.
It's our game. You heard him. The only Captain Canada we know, Brian Smith. Is.
Thanks, man. Appreciate your time.
Smitty, awesome stuff.
Appreciate
man.
You guys.
Enjoy your all Stanley right, Cup you. Final from Nashville.
Thank you.
All right. It was awesome. God, yeah. He played the game. Like, just he.
How competitive. Afraid God,
him
of nothing.
In his prime this time of year.
Yeah.
Like, it can do it all. Like a Matthew Tkachuk.
Yeah, very much. And just, you know, talk about like the guys this time of year got to play in the dirty areas and the blue paint. And let's say he didn't know anywhere else to play. I got to say, him ending up with a ranch in Nashville is like the most predictable thing. Like, if someone had said to you, yes, you don't know where he is, what do you think he's doing?
Yeah.
That's what I would have expected.
For sure. Okay, we got a few minutes here. You want to go around the NHL a little bit? Because there is some news. The Ottawa Senators solidified their coaching staff around Travis Green with Nolan Baumgartner and Mike Yeo. And now we're hearing some news.
Hold on. Mike Yeo has been on an NHL bench for 400 straight seasons, has he not?
Yes.
I feel like he's coached every team in the league.
Yeah, which kind of brings us to Lane Lambert, because his name's now out there for the Toronto Maple Leafs. Mm-hmm. And maybe like Mike Yeo a little bit. I believe that, you know, ever since I started getting around or been involved in pro hockey, there seems to be a sense that there's some really good assistant coaches, associate coaches that try their luck at a head coach. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't fit. You're an assistant coach. You're an associate coach. That's your strength. That's where you're best at.
Yeah.
Is that Lane Lambert?
Could be. I mean, I've heard nothing but good things about the guy, but I can't help but notice that the Islanders got quite a bit better when they made a coaching change this year, and that could be a team that just wanted a change of voice or whatever, but they were the worst defensive team in the NHL this year, so maybe it didn't quite work out. It's tough to look at how it went on Long Island and say it was an awesome tenure. I think he would say it was disappointing compared to where expectations were. So, but that, you know, I can think of guys like that, particularly like outgoing, jovial guys you connect with. I think Rick Bowness made the transition to head coach really well, but I think of Jack Capuano, who I had, who was a great assistant coach as a head coach. I don't know if his personality is suited for that. He's such a great guy to just chat with, and you can't really talk with your head coach the same way you can an assistant.
And then Lambert had, like you said, a good reputation working all these years with Barry Trotz.
Mm-hmm.
And
that helps.
A lot of people said that you know, the success of Barry around the technical part of the game really was credited to Lane.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if the Toronto Maple Leafs are kind of looking that way, where Craig Berube's the kick in the ass or pat on the back guy,
and
Lane, I don't think Lane will ever get the Leafs to play like Barry Trotz's teams.
No, that would be pretty impressive.
But, you know, from the technical part of that part of the game, mm-hmm. maybe it could be a good mix with Craig Berube.
Craig Berube and possibly, Mike Van Rijn would stay on the bench, maybe Mark Savard. So the Leafs bench has taken shape too. Shesterkin had a quote here. You want to hear? This is Shesterkin's quote on his long-term future in New York.
Igor, now that the season is over, do you allow yourself to think about contract or wanting to be here for a long time?
Sorry, I don't speak English.
What a great option to have.
I speak money.
Yeah, oh yeah, we all speak USD, but that's a pretty clever way to bail out of that.
He's got one more year before becoming a restricted free agent, is that? I don't know his status.
I'm going to give you his status in 10, 9, 8. All right. He is a UFA after this next season.
After next season.
So he makes 5.66 this next season and then will be UFA, 28 years old.
With the cap going up significantly.
If he has even a halfway decent start to next season, he's the next $10
million. Oh, keep going.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, keep going. 10's an old number.
It is old.
Ten's,
Bob got it a million years ago.
10's like 5 years old.
Price got it.
Yes.
Yeah, like a number of guys did.
Yeah.
All right.
Was there color television back then?
I don't know. Who knows? Shesty's going to get himself 11, 12?
Yeah, I'd say that he'd have a good case to push it to.
Yesterday's price is not today's price.
And that quote comes from all the Islanders fans listening. Run it up. Yeah, run the number up.
They clearly have a thing going in New York with Richter to King Henry to Shesterkin. So
they truly have it's like being a Pittsburgh Steelers coach or something. It's like, you know, Cowher to Tomlin. Just a couple of guys. That's all you need.
I like the Devils open to trading their 10th pick overall.
You like that little tidbit? Yeah.
And who's Nakesh?
Natchez. Yeah.
Martin Natchez is out there. Mm. Now, I heard him linked to the Montreal Canadiens.
Really?
Yes.
Makes so much sense.
Yes, it does.
Although, are Carolina and Montreal over their little feud from the Kotkaniemi Aho stuff? Bergevin's gone.
First round picks and prospects talk BS walks.
Yeah.
And that's probably what Carolina's going to be looking at right now to move him. But they're gonna want that 8 to 10 pick. The other one that could fall into that is the Kraken for Martin. They also, I think, if I'm not mistaken, Ron Francis drafted him.
Natchez,
in Carolina.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of a link there.
Bad.
But that a trade for him would fall in with that. That pick.
And then extension for him? Where's he at in his contract? I don't know that answer.
Ask his dad.
What?
Or his uncle. Don't you? So did somebody, a family member, mention him getting out of there? And
oh, is that a thing?
I think that's a thing.
Natchez, he's just RFA right now.
Yeah.
So.
But he'd be 8, 9. He'd be up there.
I mean, he is, maybe it's like McDavid and... He might be the second fastest guy in the league. McDavid, McKinnon, Natchez. He's in that category. So if you're a rebuilding Canadiens team to put, you know, a growing Slefkovsky and Caulfield with a speedster like him, he had 24 goals, 53 points last year, 71 points the year before. The guy's got a lot of value for a guy who's still pretty young. So 25 years old, 6'2", 190.
All right, what else you got? Got a minute left.
A lot of things. Penguins are prioritizing a Crosby extension. Not sure what a Crosby extension would look like.
Tell us what you want. He'd be one of those where it's like, it's too much. It's too much.
You think he's going to want less than they offer?
Well, it'll be like, if I leave less, what can we do? Kind of negotiation. Right. That's the type of guy he is. It's all about winning right now for him.
Yeah. I mean, we got all sorts of quotes from Novak and whatever.
In your opinion?
Probably not. Can he be a league minimum guy and help someone? He seems like one of those guys who'll just play till they tell him he can't.
Yeah,
like,
I don't want to see him like that.
I don't either.
I don't like to see any athlete just kind of holding on just for that,
to be a
healthy scratch. And
I imagine then you're like, this is all I've ever done. What, I got to learn how to knit or something now? Like,
hey,
happens to all of us.
At least I didn't have a career to let go of.
When it's over, it's over. All right. Our thanks to Captain Canada, Ryan Smith, and Gary Galley. Enjoy your night, everybody. We're back tomorrow.